Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
And Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody.
Producer extraordinaire. So, gentlemen, I have a question for you. We talked a bit about in Weird Things about how when you're a company like Google or Facebook, or let's say you're involved in the entertainment, you're working to or you're appealing to your market's a worldwide audience. And rules are different in other places, and not just the way simple rules work like taxation, et cetera. Sometimes there are very strongly different rules. And one of those is China. China is a very, very powerful economy, fast becoming one of the largest. There's economic indicators that show that they're going to level off, but they're huge, huge. It's a big part of it. Like you look at I think Apple makes just as much money in China as they do in the United States, or China's becoming a bigger market. It's a huge, huge market. And entertainment properties in China. China is very, very, very big. China has also been extending its influence around the world and other countries through loans, economic development projects, which is not without problems because other countries are realizing there are strings attached to that, which, guess what? It's not benevolent, It's no more benevolent than Microsoft or Google or, the United States efforts, whatever, but have you. And so one of the things we're seeing is, one, we've talked about how Google's talking about expanding into China, and they had a project which was called Dragonfly, which is a Chinese search engine, which was going to censor certain results and also make it so every single person doing a search there, their phone number was tied to it so they know who did the search. So it wasn't just a matter of, hey, we're going to provide a limited product. We're going to provide a product, and it's going to work with a government-owned company that basically, if you search for something you shouldn't be, will notify the government.
Right.
This is a country without what we call due process. This is a country where some of the rules aren't obvious and free to interpretation. Mm-hmm. And, in light of, it should be a bigger story, but it's not, is Fan Bingbing. Fan Bingbing was an actress who was in Iron Man 2. She was in one of the X-Men movies. She is in China, done way more movies than that, is one of the biggest action movie or one of the biggest movie stars in the world. A while ago, it got exposed that she was getting what was called doing two contracts. One contract with studios was for one amount. The other contract was for much less, which was what was reported to the government. And then she disappeared. She's vanished.
Man,
we have no idea. And then, what happened to her? There's been no statements, nothing out of the Chinese government, whatever. And there's just, she's mysterious, but it's not even really talked about in China as far as what happened there, which mentions of that have been wiped and suppressed. And so that's what we're dealing with. And this is, I don't want to get political or whatever. I guess my frustration is I don't talk politics on Twitter because, one, I'm just figuring things out like everybody else, and I'm not going to enforce my opinion or, hey, everybody, I think this because I think everybody else is as smart as I am and has a right to their own opinions and stuff, and I'm not going to try to sway anybody or do this. So I don't get into it. I just avoid that whole mess because do I want to argue with somebody who disagrees with me? What's the point of that? But I do get kind of frustrated where people who are, let's say, celebrities who are very outspoken on some matters on Twitter and Facebook, outspoken about some matters, will be completely silent about an issue like this. We don't hear celebrities who are involved in properties or involved in China complaining about Fan Bingbing's disappearance. This is somebody, people have acted with her, people in franchise with her aren't saying anything. They're saying nothing about this. Mm-hmm. Yet they feel very free to talk about other things, which is fine, but it's just icky and hypocritical, I guess. So open up the floor for discussion on that one.
Sure. China is certainly something, if you draw a circle around, America has certain values, right? Whether or not you disagree or agree with that general statement of America respects freedom, or America respects democracy, or America respects this, that, and the other. Certainly internally, there can be a lot of debate, but when you look at a system like you have in China, I think that that is something that you need to understand, that, that this is a massive player on a global scale, and there are values there that I'm happy that we do respect to the level that we respect them in America, because I do think that if somebody, I mean, we spent 2 months freaking out about, you know, how Brittany Murphy died. If a major actress just went missing, it would be a national and by that sense, global scandal. And I think partly it's because there's an expectation there that people just don't disappear randomly in a way that in China, if you look at how they've cracked down on dissidents and political enemies, sometimes that does happen. As to, you know, people taking stances on Twitter and publicly, like, I don't know. In my heart of hearts, I don't necessarily, I don't know what I am to expect from an actor or a musician in terms of political thought. Obviously, it is a branding exercise, and there is, you know, to take the most cynical view of it, hey, look, there's a reason why Nike had a record quarter tying themselves to the Colin Kaepernick controversy, because there is an element that binds people to what they believe in, and that makes that elevates this to something more than just, oh, we have good sneakers. Now it means something more. We are a socially responsible company. I'm a socially responsible actor. I'm a this or that. So I don't know what is to be expected. I know that it is not something that I take particularly seriously. I would rather see as a fan of unhinged rock stars, I would rather see Kanye West making a mess of the end of Saturday Night Live, because to me, the cultural worth of that chaos is worth more than the ending of Saturday Night Live, where they just wave into the camera while the same music that's played since forever plays. So I don't know. I tend to tune a lot of that out, but I can certainly see where it can be a hypocrisy if you pay attention to one thing very, very tightly. Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, Kanye closed SNL this week wearing a Make America Great hat and a Colin Kaepernick jersey.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a you know, which you want to create controversy. Brilliant.
Yeah. Oh no, definitely. I mean, look, and he is a provocateur. He then, you know, the SNL went off the air, and thanks to the benefit of Chris Rock's Instagram story, we saw that he continued to just lecture the audience because he's Kanye, and that's what a Kanye does. That went into fairly incendiary political rhetoric. That was very much taking kind of a side in things. So again, I enjoy that because of the chaos. I don't know when we started expecting rock stars to be people that we totally agreed with. And I do think Kanye is about as close as we get to, you know, David Bowie dressing in a Nazi outfit, kind of unpredictable rock star. And that's not to equate what he was doing to a Nazi, but I just mean in terms of being a provocateur and somebody that you want to, you know, look at.
I guess my question is, it's like, I mean, it's kind of in Kanye. This is, that's why I have, he's always been, his own person. And that's, and I like the fact that he's going to do his, he's a guy that will Instagram himself wearing the Kaepernick jersey and MAGA and be like, deal with this, whatever. And it's like, I'm not looking, he's not my Christopher Hitchens, you know, but he's a guy that's doing things that are extremely unpopular. Yeah. And anytime somebody says something that's sort of away from the mainstream, even if it's what I totally agree with, and there's sort of a fearlessness there, I kind of respect that. You know, there are films and documentaries I totally disagree with, but I go, man, you know, they stand up for it. You know, was it? Ed Begley Jr., you know, has been a green activist for decades, was very much concerned about climate change, whatever, and would ride his bike everywhere, like would genuinely ride his bike and show up in places and do this. He lived it. And you would watch somebody like Ed Begley Jr., like, I don't agree with maybe your dire sort of outlook on things, but I respect the fact that, as far as I know, you do this, where if I have to watch another person who has a, you know, has a supercar collection and a private jet tell me I need to worry about my greenhouse, you know, gas emissions, I'm telling, it's just frustrating. You know, I went to a presentation with a director I really like, who was talking about, yeah, we got to do, it's bad climate change, we got to cut back all this, then went on to go talk about his sports car collections, McLarens and stuff like this. And it's like, huh, interesting, you know. And
let's draw a circle around this. What do we expect from the, obviously there is our modern times do incentivize people to state personal, if not political, opinions as part of their brand. What do we expect from that? Like is there, are you just always, I think Andrew, your position is that no matter what, whatever you say, even if it is something that will bind people to you, you now risk the possibility that you will be found a hypocrite if you do not walk the walk, since you are taking the benefit of talking the talk.
I mean, there are actors who I really enjoy their work and I disagree with and have no trouble watching their work, no trouble watching, you know, what they do, and can enjoy some of the stuff they enjoy and have no problem with it. And then some of them, they have positions they've made clear. But when I see there's a hypocrisy in there, where I see them get on a high horse to say, hey, this person sucks, blah, 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 this person's oppressive or this, like, it's fine. But when you consciously avoid criticizing, let's say, the C word, because you're economically incentivized not to say anything because
China,
there's a cost.
China, not the other C word.
China. We established that in Weird Things as China. But yeah, if you're like, no, I won't. Oh, yeah, the actor I was in this movie with, they vanished. I'm not going to say anything about that. Or I'm not going to mention, hey, I mentioned the word Tibet and now I'm in trouble because my corporate partners there told me not to do that. That's the point. I understand that. I've worked there, I've done stuff there, but I'm not an outspoken person on Twitter because I don't want to be a hypocrite. I don't want to go, I'm like, hey, let's stand up for what's right. What about this? Well, I will lose some money if I say anything about that.
But you can't be beholden to all the world's problems if you have issues that are like,
if one of the people I knew, one of our group, somebody we worked with, whatever, vanished and disappeared, and the only reason I don't say anything about it is because of China, mm-hmm. which we know that. I mean, we can assume that, infer that. That's the problem. No, you're not beholden to the world's problems, but I can name an Avengers actor who was really big on Tibet, really, really big on Tibet, doesn't say anything about it now.
Sure. I mean, you know, and that's a case where it's not just the implications to the larger company, but I'm sure whatever people that person has to answer to. What if you were someone in that situation where you had that pressure coming down from a billion-dollar company? What do you even do about that?
I mean, that's one of the reasons why I've avoided being a bit into politics at all publicly. So the idea that, hey, if I do compromise, you're not going to find a track record of me saying I'd never do this, or I stand up for this, or I believe this, or whatever. Because, like, mm-hmm. listen, I don't know. To me, I guess, and that kind of comes down into it too. It's like, I think I'm maybe frustrated by the lack of controversy, the lack of criticism of that. I'm frustrated by this sort of, we'll encourage people to get up there and do this, but then we whistle and ignore and turn our head away when we're like, wait, why aren't you saying anything about this? Well, because the thing you criticized, you are the thing you criticized. When it's easy and cheap, it's like we talk about humor today. Like, you know, I love the fact that we're in a country, you can go on an award show and you can criticize the commander in chief. I love the fact that we live in a country where you can do that and you really don't fear reprisals. You really, really don't. You don't fear that. But there's not really anything brave about that anymore, because, like, in Hollywood, there's no reprisals for that. People cheer you on and do that. Kanye goes up there and says something that is, in my opinion, not any more out there or loony than people who have the opposite point of view, and now everybody's yelling at him because they disagree. Everybody's yelling. Fine, we're right to yell at him, but it's like,
yeah, Kanye also is comes from a point where there is a contradictory sort of nature to him that is part of his brand, right? Mm-hmm. But that I think is, you know, there are some people that just know exactly where to steer to get the most people talking, and he is steering into those waters, whether or not they are choppy. Because by the way, the last time he steered into them, the boat rocked, but he was more talked about than ever, and so now he's going to hit that button again. It also so happens that the last time he hit that button, he was releasing an album, and
then now this time he has a new album,
and he's releasing an album. Right. At least theoretically.
I think so.
Hashtag where's Yandi?
Yeah. My business is like, I think if you have a platform, use it. Use it. I have no problem people using it, but mm-hmm. I think that I'm frustrated by the, you know, like, I'm going to use it because there's no cost to this.
Yeah,
you know, there's no cost to it.
Is your point that on some level, at least roughly, the moral math kind of has to add up if you are going to, if you want to stand up and be lauded for taking a point?
I'm trying to figure out the rules. I'm trying to figure out why we care about some things, why we don't other, why we give attention. I kind of know, but I also, it's sort of, the answer ends up being more cynical than, you know, is frustrating, you know? And like, I guess that's the sort of thing is that, like, I don't know. I don't know what the moral ground is. Like, you know, I've talked about this before about like, should I work in China? Should I not? I don't know if I'll be able to anymore. I don't know. But like, should I go there? Should I not? Sure. You know, like, you know, I'm uncomfortable with governments disappearing people for political reasons. I'm uncomfortable with that.
It's,
you know,
it's a hard, controversial statement that you made.
I know. Well, we say that, Bryce, sure. But other people apparently have no problem with that at all. And thus we're in this position where we're like, well, we don't want to friend China because of their money, because they bought us,
How much of it do you think, how much of it do you think is just it, specifically in the Fang Bingbing case of it, this is an international story, and between the nature of it being an international story and China's extensive work to erase as much of it as possible, do you think that that is China as a government succeeding in making this an obscure story?
You know, I think the sad part is that news wise, it's more dog bites man than it is man bites dog. Like, you know, if you really want to get, it doesn't take long to scratch the surface on Chinese human rights issues to get some stuff that is happening in real time that you would be, that would, you know, curl your hair. I thought that John Oliver did a very, very good job of going into some of the stuff that is already there and, you know, making light of the whole Winnie the Pooh kind of stuff, and also sort of exporting the idea that China does want to continue to export their influence. And quite possibly we might be moving into, I mean, you know, we, you know, however much you want to take seriously the hyperbole of establishing like an autocracy in America, in our current administration, there are like actual movements being made in China to remove term limits and restrictions on power in an already amorphous central party atmosphere. So I think part of the reason why this is not a big thing is A, unless you really want to get into, all right, well, let's investigate why people disappear in China. And it just so happens that it's the reason why is because it's a famous actress that got disappeared this time. That's a daunting task, either journalistically or governmentarily, if you want to confront them on, you know, from a government perspective. But then beyond that, at some point, she might just turn back up and not ever talk about it again. And
well,
that'll.
Sure. I think the problem here on the media side is that it's hard to find a media, like, you go watch a box office movie, you watch anything, either China's a large market for them or there's Chinese money invested in the film industry. You know, they've bought entirely whole studios and stuff here, you know, and here in LA, I've seen a big influx of Chinese money, and every Chinese investment comes from a company that in part has party members who serve on the board of that. So there's a huge amount of influence here. So, you know, we mentioned, you know, somebody we know who are friends of the show who, you know, a screenwriter who mentioned Tibet, and then from the corporate parent got, you know, basically told, no, don't say this because China's a big market and this could get our movie banned in China. So this person quiet about that, you know, and understandably so, you know, understandably so. But that is an issue. I think why we're not hearing more actors say anything about this is because they all have projects that involve Chinese money in some way, and they know they can get their picture pulled or their project pulled because of that. And that's a scary thing to me, is to see that this country has bought this kind of influence now. They have bought the silence of people in the entertainment industry. Yeah. Most people in the entertainment industry will not say anything because they got purchased, their silence got bought, because they know if I want to continue to have a career, I want to go work at this company or whatever, I know they'll be unhappy because of this. That's a scary thing to me. That is a chilling effect. That is a thing that has happened right now. Nobody talks about it. Partially because people have this benign view of China too. That's the scary thing too.
Yeah. You know, I mean, what you're describing is not, you're describing a broad, often indirect sort of influence, right? Like, mm-hmm. it is Chinese money being put into the entertainment industry, but it's not like, Matt Damon got $100,000 from China to shut up. It's that there are enough membranes in between that get affected that it's not always an active decision not to. It becomes like never even considered. Well, in some cases.
No. I think you're dead on. Is that it's not necessarily that you are. Hollywood in general is a very platform dependent industry, right? And it is possibly even less so now that you can control more things on the internet, you know, personally, or you can. There's more players that want to get, to buy things, but it still is something where, if you know, why does everybody work out? Why does everybody try to be aesthetically pleasing as they can to look a certain way? Because you're going to get more work that way. You're going to get more. You're going to have a career that way. You're going to fit into what people want to buy, because what the platforms want to buy is what you want to be. And part of that, and I think that the insidious sort of chilling element that Andrew's referring to is now part of that is, don't point out that China just screwed up stuff, because you never know when the next time you're going to have all the dice roll your way. You're going to have a great meeting with an executive who's going to run you right up to the top of the pole. The top of the company is going to love you. They're going to like see exactly what the vision of your project is. They're going to want to give you the right budget that you want to do it. Problem is that they have this partnership with Beijing and this is going to be distributed out in China. This is going to be great for that market. So, you know, when we look through your Twitter and we see you talking about this, this is really not good for your career.
And when it comes to the entertainment industry in America, I don't know if, I guess maybe you would have a better sense of this, but blackballing or like general shunning misgiving. Like I look at like Dave Bautista, who has been outspoken against the James Gunn Guardians of the Galaxy stuff, and that is a situation that's still very much up in the air. What does he do as someone who's been very outspoken, where a lot of his other cast members have had a variety of responses? Does he get work with Disney or Marvel again? Does he get work with anything Disney funds, anything Marvel funds, anything that is one step away from those, two steps away? You know, that's a questionable situation, and the fact that it's questionable only, you know, gets heightened by the China element.
I know nothing about really what happened behind the scenes on that thing. I know nothing. I have friends that know James Gunn, really like him. And then I've seen he's a very combative guy on Twitter, which really wasn't brought up. But man, when they come for me, I hope I have a friend like Bautista. You know, I hope I have somebody in my corner like him, you know, and I respect, like, he's a guy like, I don't know that there's, I don't know the facts. I don't know if there was more behind it or not. I don't know that. I do respect the fact that Bautista's not afraid to say, hey, you know, I think from what we've seen publicly, he's upset by this, whatever. And so I respect that. And it's sometimes like, I may not agree or don't disagree. I don't know enough to know anything, but I'm like, hey, you know, like, you're risking the ear of your corporate giant parent. You're risking this. And I respect that your principles are, you stand up for your buddy. You think your buddy has been slighted and you're going to go tell them, you know, hey, it's true. Man, you know, I wish we saw more of that. People, like, we get a lot of people who are like, I'm being brave. You'd risk nothing. You risk nothing. You know, I won an award show. I said this, you risk nothing. Everybody in the room agreed with you. There was nothing brave about that. Somebody who's risking this right here, who really may not get work for, man, here's my respect.
Yeah, because he really only has one card to play, right? And that is that he's Drax in a very, very profitable franchise that only proves to be more profitable since it was, you know, theoretically the franchise that would take more of the lead in the next, you know, run of this gigantic, never before seen cinematic juggernaut, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I don't know. I do think that, yeah, Bryce, what you're pointing out is that it's easy to get on the maybe not list, and in a very subjective industry like Hollywood is, where risk aversion is kind of the rule, right? Then biting the hand that feeds you in general is a major problem. Look, there's a reason why everybody in Hollywood complains about quote unquote Hollywood accounting, Hollywood math, that if you have a contract that says you get paid after, you know, that you know, Peter Jackson, you know, wound up suing New Line because amazingly, as it turns out, the Lord of the Rings movies didn't make money. And so he didn't see stuff that he believed that he was owed on the back end.
Yeah.
And yet it is extraordinarily rare that you see anybody sue, because you don't want to be the guy that sues, because the next time somebody's thinking about making a big deal with you, then maybe they won't make that big deal because they think that, oh, geez, one hair out of place. And next thing you know, we're getting sued by this happy monster.
And it's not just because of this direct slight to whichever in, you know, single studio. It becomes every studio looks at you and says, oh, this guy sues studios.
Possible liability.
Yeah.
And it's deeper than that. I can tell you about experiences of things I'm countering. Like, a lot of you are like, oh, they stole my idea. Whenever I hear that, it's kind of BS. But I've heard no of examples of where, like, oh, yeah, no, like, the agent's like, yeah, no, they actually took this. Like, what are we going to do? Nothing, because that agency will continue to deal. You're not important to that client, to that agent, as important as the other partner. They're not going to go after. I've watched agencies get screwed out of commissions by, you know, the talent gets paid. But I watch agencies get screwed out of commissions because the network's like, no, we're changing the terms of the deal. Yeah. You can either accept this. If you fight it, then we're never going to buy another one of your shows. While this, you know, it's scary. Now I'm going to flip the script. Now I'm going to say, hey, here's a reason not to say anything about this. If you're part of, let's say, if I'm, if I'm part of some, you know, new, they brought back Archie comic superheroes, whatever, and we've got a big franchise in China. Okay. And I'm one of the stars of this thing, and I've been normally outspoken for, but now I'm part of this franchise. One of the reasons for me to not say anything isn't necessarily my own reputation, but if I go say something about, like, I have a movie releasing or we have an active franchise there, I could be killing the paydays for other actors if all of a sudden China says no more. That's another situation where it's maybe certainly you're benefiting from this, but also the idea that, like, well, if I'm asked in interviews about this thing, I'm going to shut up because, hey, we have another movie opening up there in 6 months and whatever, and China could kill it because my company corporate parent isn't keeping us in line. And it's not a matter of me losing money, but then all of a sudden, well, all these other people are going to be, you know, lose work. So it's a defense.
I mean, I think that is a line of thinking that can come up, but I don't know that that counteracts the moral argument that we've sort of been taking, right? Like every film is a production that, you know, hundreds of people work on. And
well, like one of the things that was frustrating was
not to get all Good Place on you, Bryce, but like really, who do you owe your greatest moral debt to? Is it the person? Is it your neighbor? Or for which you can definitely decide whether or not they eat tonight? Or is it the greater pain of the world, for which your opinion would be a drop of water in the ocean? Like, wherein? So, like, in that situation where you're like, look, China doesn't care. They don't know that Dave Bautista is Dave Bautista, right? If Dave Bautista all of a sudden decided to move on with his James Gunn anger and then start talking about Fan Bing Bing and start lobbing accusations and going on Good Morning America and talking about, like, how this is a travesty and he is shaming Disney and Marvel, China doesn't know who Dave Bautista is. They know that Marvel is doing this.
One Disney of Marvel's guys. And
they will say, guess what? Now Mary Poppins doesn't get to play here. Guess what? Now all these other big, gigantic tentpoles get to play here. And maybe if you prove that, you know, you don't employ rogues like this Dave Bautista, then maybe at some point, 5-10 years down the road, then we'll let Disney movies back in. But for right now, no. We control the message. You let the message get out. This is your problem. And now Dave Bautista has to answer to why Lin-Manuel Miranda doesn't get a check. Like, that kind of stuff does happen. Like China looks at things systemically. And this is beyond – that's a global scale. On a micro example, when I used to – every newspaper, right, departments tend to get really annoyed with each other. And you see this probably the most in editorial departments and news departments, news gathering departments, reporters. A lot of people don't realize this, but editorial departments are not connected to the newsroom. In fact, they're very specifically separated. And yet, if the editorial department decides to say – and let's just take a political example – Donald Trump is the worst person on the planet – and if he died tomorrow, here's our editorial that says the world would be better. That reporter, that New York Times reporter, still has to go to work and talk to the White House, right? And they could have a great relationship with the White House. Everybody could live in a healthy, happy world. And yet now all the White House sees is, what's this headline about if Trump died? It would be better. And they have to say, I don't write that. That's disconnected. They don't care. Mm-hmm. Now they're going to make sure that somebody else gets to the head of the line or gets this scoop that they want to get out there and a piece of information. Like, that kind of – the way that we think of the world is very often not how the rest of the world thinks of us. They don't make these delineations.
Well, also, like, you described a delineation, but, like, man, back when I worked for the JRF, I'd get frustrated because you get some psychic, you know, claimed, you know, John Edwards, whatever, claim they could talk to, like, you know, dead children and, you know, would fleece parents, in my opinion, and all this sort of stuff, right? And you'd wait. You wanted this to be a critical sort of story or James von Prague, you know. And the newspaper or local newspaper would cover it and they'd write a fluff piece. Why? Because they'd have the religion editor do it. Because the person above those departments who gets to decide who gets to write the stories is making choices and stuff. And that's how I saw it, was like they could have written a very, very critical thing and done us all a bunch of good by tearing this person down and exposing hypocrisy there. But they didn't. They made a choice. You know, the people who run the paper said, you know what, we'll have this person do it. Like, do we really want to get into this? Let's go do this. And I wouldn't be surprised if some investigative journalist had pitched it or whatever, but we'd heard internally, I pitched it, but they told me it's religion. They told me this is religion. We don't get into matters of religion. And I'm like, if there was a fraud case with the archdiocese was like ripping people off, whatever, you wouldn't cover up. Well, that's different. Like, you know.
Well, I mean, look, I think that argument gets us to the fact that I think there's a reason why journalism has grown in the direction that it has, in that gatekeepers who make decisions like that have become less
valued, and now you are, if you are a gatekeeper at a major media outlet, you are thinking less, what is tomorrow's news, and more, what are we going to get caught on if we don't move on it now, right? You have to be more preventative than you used to be, at the very least, and not to say that it's better or it's fixed or whatever, but now, because of the internet, the speed of the internet, the sometimes recklessness of the internet, they are forced into a situation where things, A, cannot be killed. You can't throw things down the memory hole in the way that you used to. And B, you have to at least anticipate, not if we're going to get beat by the crosstown paper, for which you could probably call two people and find out what they're working on, but rather, are we going to get beat by some dude we have no idea? Or even more so now in social media, are we going to get beat by the person, by the what would be a lead source in a whistleblowing story, just publishing all this stuff by themselves on their social media that now we have to just rehash and cover?
Hey, you know what's a fun game is coming in the last 5 minutes of a After Things segment and try to figure out where we got here and what you guys are talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's and I was trying to figure out, like, what's, you know, do you do business in countries and stuff where, you know, you disagree with? And I think you're at a disadvantage not to. But I think it's one thing, like Tesla's talking about building a car plant in China, right? And, you know, I think for Tesla, it's fine. It's car, it's manufacturing. We buy goods from China and all that. But if you're making an information product like Google was rumored to do, but then had everybody who got the memo delete it, you know, I mean, it's, you know, Google's rumored to be building, you know, the Dragonfly, where you're doing an information technology. There's what you can, any technology can enable a foreign power. You know, if you send steel to China, it could be used to build weapons to mow people down in Tiananmen Square. Get it. Understood that. But that's the intention of the thing, is not to do that. Whereas a search engine that tells, you know, the government, hey, yeah, this guy's looking up Tiananmen Square. You know, this guy's looking up this thing. We're reporting them to the government. That's different. It's building an apparatus, you know, to do that. And, you know, we're getting in our country, we're getting people, you know, like some people are upset that Google works with government and the military and provides, you know, object image recognition stuff, which could be used for targeting and stuff. And I don't have the same moral problem those people have, but I'm glad that they are signing letters and expressing their moral positions on that. I'm fine by that. People are worried about the use of robotics, and one of the reasons that some people in Google push for Google to get out of robotics is that one of the biggest contractors was the military, and they aren't comfortable with this. And you know, I'm hey, listen, you know, I respect. I mean, I may disagree with, you know, I would rather us have that edge than somebody else, but I respect the fact, if you're a pacifist, that you're coming out and risking something to say that. Okay.
Well, especially the engineers who work at Google, who either directly or indirectly are empowering that program by being in the same ballpark, you know, same building.
Yeah. You know, and so, I mean, I think that that's, you know, when people come out and make statements and they really have something to risk, that's what impresses me, when they're really putting on the line. It's in people who make these cheap, grandstanding sort of things, like, that's fine, it's expressed an opinion, but it's not really heroic, you know, but that's my opinion. And I guess that comes down to, is I wanted a longer story to get back to, is Elon Musk settled apparently with the SEC. You follow this?
Yeah. That seems legit. It seems to me that his tweets were fueled by a overabundance of confidence that he really did have the financing and really was about to lock this up. And then in one of those interdependent system things, like the mere fact that he tweeted about it possibly undercut the for sureness of the deal, which made him come across as being somebody who was trying to affect the market, legitimately per the judgment, you know, actually affected the market and had to pay some money, and say some things.
Well, I think the element there that really got him in trouble is Tesla, I think, is Andrew would be able to tell me, is either still or was the most shorted stock on the market.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, it has been for a while. I think, yeah, it's one of the shortest stock there is. So
he has a very publicly contentious relationship with people who do short the stock. He very much believes that there are concerted efforts to knock the stock down and to attack the company for the financial benefit of those that have short positions on the stock. And so with whether or not these two thoughts are totally independent, the idea that he put a thing out there that says, hey, when we hit this, you know, a lolcat meme number that is significantly or that is higher than where the stock is now, therefore significantly injuring people who have shorted positions on the stock, then we were going to go private and that would pretty much end the game, right? That's it. So anybody who has shorted money is screwed. And then it being revealed that there was, despite whatever conversations he might have had, the board, I guess, was not as fully informed. There were still major issues that they had yet to work out, up to and including the fact that taking a bunch of money from the Saudi wealth fund for a green car company might have been bad optics, even if it was, you know, him getting into making a deal with somebody because he hated these other people that are playing with the fortunes of his company. So I thought it was interesting to see him step down. Obviously, the fine is the fine. But I was curious to ask Andrew. I was surprised this didn't come up on Weird Things. But do you think him stepping down as chairman of the board hampers Tesla in any way?
Also, real quick question. Is this the part where we disclose or I disclose that I bought Tesla Tesla stock a couple of years ago?
Yeah, let's disclose. Yeah, I have an insubstantial, a non-insubstantial position in Tesla, so I'm biased. Let me disclose that. Yeah, of course, I guess we, in the interest of disclosures, I mean, I think I've kind of clear, people presume that, but still, yeah. Like, yeah, you know, so we have, you know, and that's one of the things we've gotten better at that on the internet. Like, I know Gizmodo and stuff's gotten better about some of the stuff because, like, their corporate parentage and stuff is so convoluted, you know, formerly whatever, because I guess they got tired too of people pointing out, like, hey, you just commented on this, but you didn't mention this, because the reporters feel like, I'm just told to write a story. Nobody's telling me what to write here in this case, you know. But so what happened? Like the crux of the settlement was like 20 or 40 million. Musk 20, Tesla 20.
Yeah.
Each one paying 20 million, and Musk agrees to step down from chairman for 3 years. Chairman's not the same role as CEO. Chief executive officer is somebody who runs the day to day, et cetera. Chairman is a person that basically controls the board, decides the board agenda, the board of directors agenda. The chairman role can be very influential, but Steve Jobs was not chairman until he stepped down from the CEO role. Then I believe he took on the chairman role. Okay. Tim Cook is not chairman of Apple. He's CEO of Apple. So often, sometimes the CEO will have the chairman role, but often they'll have it when they're one of the largest shareholders in it. In this case, Elon Musk is the largest shareholder in Tesla. And so that's why he had the chairman role. And controlling the chairman role is very helpful to prevent your own ousting and all that. But
that would be the biggest – to me, the biggest thing is, I don't know if it's a day-to-day thing, but if you're going to wonder, will Elon Musk be ousted from his own company – it is more than a – I think it's a zero chance when he is the chairman of the board. It's a non-zero chance if he
is – It wasn't zero when he was chairman, because you can still have if a majority of the shareholders got together and decided to push for a vote, and so he doesn't own the majority of the company. So if the institutional investors and people like this got together, when they have the annual meetings, they can vote or change the board layout. They could do that because he doesn't have a majority share of it. It's a little more challenging, but it's still there. I mean, because that's the way, you know, publicly traded companies work. But
now is it greater or lesser?
I mean, slightly greater. I mean, the thing that really makes the difference is the makeup of the board itself, is who's sitting on the board, and those are where the control sort of it lays there. I don't know if he may still have a board position too, though. I don't think they say that. Because anyhow, point is, the good and the bad. The good of it is, for Elon's case, is he didn't have to admit any wrongdoing. And there are people, it was funny because I'd read people like, well, this is clearly fraud. I'm like, SEC lawyers and people like that have different opinions on it. So anybody who's not directly involved in securities exchange, you know, the rules and stuff, to have a strong opinion on it, to me, is kind of idiotic, because it's like, there's a case to be said. You could look at it and say, hey, I think it's manipulation. I think he said this. He didn't have, you know, when you say funding secured financially, that should mean something legally. And other people will say that, like, well, from his point of view, he felt that it was secured, whatever. I think it's open to interpretation. You know, I as a shareholder and a customer, did not feel I felt the SEC cost me more money in their decision than Musk's tweet did. And so it's like, not to say that, you know, you shouldn't punish or prosecute people because, hey, nobody got hurt this time. That's not any reason not to prosecute it. But it is one of these things like, what problem are we solving here? And this may have been avoiding, you know, and the SEC has a right to investigate and pursue these things. But this may be the best case moving forward, is that the issue settled. It's done. Elon still gets to run Tesla, which that would have terrified me, pulling him out of running Tesla, because I don't care what other people think. Nobody can do that job, you know. So,
and I think one of the things I had seen this somewhere, and I'm trying to confirm it just to make sure it wasn't a hoax, but I think another part of the settlement was that someone needs to oversee his contributions to social media.
I didn't hear that.
I'm trying to double check it, because it was like a small part of the settlement, but it was not being reported on much at all.
Yeah, I think I have to go through. I read the original 23-page account when they brought up charges about this, and what's interesting, that whole news cycle was that they had that one was the rumor was that the settlement was going to be he was going to step down as CEO, and that would have been detrimental to the company, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And then they were apparently that was going to be ill. Then they backed out last minute and said no, and now we come out where it's no, step down as chairman for 3 years. And I think the SEC wanted to permanently ban. It was really draconian. But anyhow. But Bryce, I don't think it would be a bad idea if there was.
I mean, we've said as much X weeks ago because of not even this issue. It was something else, right?
I think it's him and the submarine thing and the guy.
That's right, the guy. So whether or not I can actually find this and back it up, I wouldn't be surprised if that was something being put into place.
I would be surprised if he would agree to that, because that's a freedom of speech restriction, and it would be I'm saying no, I have to read that, but that would be because I don't know. That would be very, very – he might have to say he has to agree to or whatever SEC policies or something, but – and they'd already – I mean, who knows? We'll find out. I don't have any information, so.
Yeah.
That's one of the things to think about, is that, you know – when you're involved in large organizations, you have other people who are, you know, you are beholden to. You know, when Elon Musk goes on the Joe Rogan podcast and smokes weed, and the next day the stock dips, that affected a lot of people. Me, personally, my stock value went down because of that. Now, I invested in Elon Musk because he's an out-of-the-box thinker, and he's going to do unpredictable things. Mm-hmm. So I'm along for the ride. I accept that. That's sort of the brand that I bought into. But other people.
Okay. I found it here in the settlement. This is number 5B. Must comply with all mandatory procedures implemented by Tesla Inc. regarding 1, the oversight of communications relating to the company made in any format, including social media, and 2, the pre-approval of any such written communications that contain or reasonably could contain informational material to the company or its shareholders.
Okay, so that's with the agreement with Tesla. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not quite as direct as what I thought, but it's...
No, but it's, yeah, it's but that's there. That's... Question to see how enforceable it is, but yeah,
saying that he needs to abide with Tesla's own social media guidelines or whatever.
Well, and some possible second key approach if he's tweeting about Tesla. So.
Hey man, do you want to pick?
Yes. Let's go to picks.
I only just started it, but we're diving in over on the Cord Killers podcast, Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. And I've only watched the first episode, but I like what they're up to. Written by Max Landis. It's got Elijah Wood and a bunch of Britos. It's got this vaguely Doctor Who vibe, and I'm really enjoying
it. Hey,
Brian,
why are you in the right corner of that top rated episodes?
It does look like me. That's amazing. I believe those are characters from the. I saw them in the first episode, I do believe. That's amazing.
My pick will be The Good Place. Came back. It's on NBC season 3. I'm curious to see where it goes. I think that some of the turn that they took for the setting of the third season is interesting, and I'm curious to see how it plays out.
Cool, Bruce.
I got a pick. It is. Oh, what is it? You know what? I'll double up on Justin's pick from Weird Things. Maniac. Go check out Maniac on Netflix. It's 10-hour-long episodes. It's a limited miniseries, sci-fi / cerebral thriller. Well, not really a thriller, but it'll make you think, and it has some thoughts on mental health. So check out Maniac on Netflix.
My pick is if you're in the market for a new car, you want an electric, Tesla Model 3. Tesla Model 3. I'm loving this car. Loving this car.
Yeah. Hey, there was like an update, wasn't there? They had like a Mad Max mode. Did we already talk about this?
Yeah, they're coming out with the new update to 9.0, which is going to be the new software update for it, which is right now when you do like the lane following or whatever, car following, it's cool. What the new one's going to be, if you're navigating, it will help, like it will change lanes for you and do this and do off-ramp and stuff.
Yeah, I saw this is what a great time to live in the future, where my beef with the update can be that from what few videos have come out so far, when it overtakes a vehicle in quote unquote, you know, in Mad Max mode, it stays in the lane to the left. And I'm like, left lane is for passing. Come on, buddy. You got to get back in that right lane.
Well, it depends on the state.
Okay.
So, version 9 install canceled because Tesla engineer watches Weird Things podcast and realizes made fatal mistake.
and again, they're navigating those weird waters of like, you know, how, at what point do you have this unfair robot over aggressively driving and all that stuff. It's like I understand, but I look forward to many more videos coming out next and revealing the do's and don'ts and what the algorithms dictate in that stuff.
Yeah, it's very tricky area. We're finding that if for the whole industry, self-driving, more complicated than people thought. And that's what we've been talking about for years here, is there's the basic problem, but the edge cases are the hardest ones of like somebody, you know, on the side of the road flagging you down because...
Like, I mean, on the one hand, like the free, speaking of The Good Place, you know, the trolley problem is a theoretical construct, not so theoretical to somebody's 9-to-5 job as he gets ready to write pieces of code that dictate how robots will handle emergency situations.
Yeah, I mean, there's the ethical ones, who do I kill, but also it just when normal, look at normal traffic conditions and you look at where lines, there aren't any lines or
courtesy, like at what point are you being dangerous by letting the other people go first and yielding the right of way, and man, yeah, this is,
you know, when there's a cop flagging you down, moving cars to the side, that's a hard one because, you know, that's
crazy. That is one of those moments where it's just like, sorry, officer, my robot didn't recognize your authority. Like, that's awkward.
Yeah. So we'll see. It's going to be very, very interesting to see where that develops. But yeah, I think real quick, like, I tell you my insight was about, you know, people like, I'm never going to let a robot, you have to pull my steering wheel out of my hands. I think it's like, no, you always have a steering wheel. We always have the option for a steering wheel. It's just that sometimes when you're driving on the highways, the robot's going to say, nope, I'm not going to let you do that. I'm going to keep you in this lane because there is a car there. I think that'll be the thing, is that you'll be able to, like, I'm driving. Yes, you're driving. You're making those choices. But it's kind of like the, you know, when you buy the little toy one for the kid and you put it in the seat next to you so the kitty can have the little kitty steering wheel. It's connected until it doesn't need to be connected and the robot needs to take over. That will be the future.
Sure.
So, you know, that's my Model 3. I've been very, very, very happy with it. It is a delight to drive, fun to drive. If not, I live in an apartment. I can't charge my garage. I just go charge like once a week at the supercharger. No anxiety at all. It's been very, very easy. Have not worried about that at all. I've gone long distances and stuff, and it's been great. So there we go.
Awesome.
It's been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.